Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I appreciate this opportunity to review for the record the role I played in this committee's proceedings relating to the confirmation of Mr. Lance. My testimony will cover the following points. A, when I wrote my letter of January 18, 1977, to this committee, I did not have available to me the information, which has been recently developed by a staff of 40 examiners and attorneys who have been working 10 to 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, for a period of 2 months. Instead, I was asked on a Friday, January the 14th, 1977, to produce for the public record on the following Monday a letter commenting on two specific matters which had come to the attention of the committee and giving my general opinion as to Mr. Lance's qualifications to be budget director. The two specific matters I was asked to comment on were, first, a referral made by the Comptroller's Office to the Department of Justice on December 24, 1975, of possible violations of criminal statutes prohibiting Calhoun First National Bank from contributing to Mr. Lance's gubernatorial campaign. And two, the existence at Calhoun of overdrafts by Mr. Lance and his family. My letter confirmed the information I'd given to Mr. Schaefer on the telephone as to those two matters. See, I believe that the problems of the Calhoun Bank were known in more detail than contained in my letter by Mr. Lance, Mr. John Moore, who was in charge of reviewing the ethical and conflict of interest problems of prospective Carter appointees, and third, the agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I assume that information available to these individuals had been made available to the president-elect or his staff and to this committee, either directly or by the transition staff. An article in Saturday's Washington Post confirmed my assumptions as to the president's staff, but not as to the committee. I now have indications that this committee did not have such information. For example, it is my understanding that this committee did not receive the FBI background check on Mr. Lance until September 6th this month. Others much more familiar than I with Mr. Lance's background apparently also held him in high regard at the time I wrote my letter. Obviously, President Carter nominated him. Senator Talmadge of Georgia appeared before this committee on January the 17th and under oath described Burt Lance as, quote, my good friend, close quote, and, quote, a brilliant banker and businessman, close quote. He told this committee, quote, based on his experience, his background in government, and his aggressive ability to manage, I am confident that Burt Lance will bring to the federal government qualities of sound and sensible business practice that he demonstrated in state government and in the banking industry. Senator Nunn of Georgia, a member of this committee, also testified under oath on January 17, 1977, that Burt Lance was, quote, my good friend, close quote, and that, quote, I know Burt Lance to be a man of experience, vision, dedication, and character, and I believe these qualities ensure that he will prove to be an outstanding director of OMB, close quote. I am sure that there are many other references to Mr. Lance's good reputation prior to the recent onslaught of publicity. With this introduction, I would like to focus on three areas. First, my understanding of the nature of the committee's request for a letter and the time frame of that request. Second, the background of facts which I assume the committee already had or should have had in January 1977 when I wrote the letter in question, and my reasons for my assumption. Thirdly, what I would do if I got another similar request from this committee. First, the nature of this committee's request. And on this, I quote from the IRS report about the Comptroller's Office. at page 31, which reads as follows. Quote, Mr. David R. Schaefer, Special Assistant to Senator Ribicoff, advised. Quote, he was formerly counsel to the Committee on Governmental Affairs. During the time, I said, quote, now I'm quoting from the IRS report of interview of Mr. Schaefer. During the time that the committee was getting ready to hold confirmation hearings for Mr. Burt Lance to be director of the Office of Management and Budget, he learned from newspaper articles and anonymous telephone calls of possible problems involving overdrafts by Mr. Lance and his family at the Calhoun First National Bank and possible campaign violations. On January 14, 1977, he telephoned Mr. Robert Blum, acting controller of the currency, and stated that allegations have come to light concerning the Calhoun Bank and Mr. Lance, and asked Mr. Blum what did he know about the allegations. Mr. Blum advised that the overdrafts had been paid. He also stated that the matter concerning Mr. Lance's campaign overdrafts had been referred to the Department of Justice. He, Schaefer, did not recall if Mr. Blum mentioned the Calhoun Bank agreement. He told Mr. Blum that the information was needed in order to determine if Mr. Lance was qualified to be director of the Office of Management and Budget. He did not recall if Mr. Blum stated definitely if Mr. Lance was qualified to be director of the Office of Management and Budget. He asked Mr. Blum if he would furnish the Senate committee a letter containing the points they had discussed. However, Mr. Blum was, quote, noncommittal, close quote. On January 17, 1977, he told Senator Percy and Senator Ribicoff about the conversation with Mr. Blum. The senator stated that a letter from Mr. Blum was necessary. Consequently, he, Schaefer, telephoned Mr. Blum on the same day and asked him for the letter. He asked Mr. Blum to include in the letter a statement about Mr. Lance's qualifications as a potential director of OMB. Mr. Blum agreed, and on Tuesday, January 18, 1977, a messenger picked up the letter at OCC. At no time did he, Schaefer, ask him for a, quote, favorable, close quote, letter. Mr. Blum's letter, dated January 18, 1977, reiterated portions of the discussion between Mr. Blum and him, Schaefer. Without the letter, Senators Percy and Ribicoff would not have felt, quote, comfortable, close quote, confirming Mr. Lance, and additional witnesses would have been called to the confirmation hearing. Mr. Blum's letter was the most significant document in the confirmation of Mr. Lance, and was read into the record verbatim. Close quote. All right. That is the end of the quotation from the IRS report. The last paragraph of Mr. Schaefer's IRS interview came as a shock to me, gentlemen. I was never told that my letter was to be a substitute for the calling of witnesses. Mr. Schaefer's I was not told it was very important. I was told that the chairman definitely desired a letter from me. Mr. Schaefer's request was limited to a request for confirmation of allegations about two specific areas. First, the campaign violations, and secondly, the overdrafts. He did not, at 4:15 in the afternoon on Monday, January the 17th, request a complete review by the next morning of Mr. Lance's stewardship at two different banks over a 15-year period. Instead, it was clear to both Mr. Schaefer and myself that what was being requested was a document for the public hearing record and not a confidential briefing for the chairman. I, therefore, had to consider the applicable laws and regulations affording the banks and the individuals involved rights of privacy as to their banking affairs. had I been asked to supply the committee with a background briefing on Mr. Lance's stewardship of the National Bank of Georgia, or the Calhoun First National Bank, I would have been glad to do so. Given the nature of Mr. Schaefer's request, the statutory constraints on me, and the information available to me at that time, I address myself specifically to the two matters raised by Mr. Schaefer. These two matters also happen to constitute the most serious transactions known to me involving Mr. Lance personally in the two banks. I concluded with my sincerely held personal opinion of his fitness for the nomination. I did not mention the formality of the corrective agreement entered into by our office with the Calhoun Bank, because first, I thought that the committee must have already known about that, and secondly, the statute required that proceedings under which that agreement was drawn not be placed in public records absent an overriding public interest, which I thought was not present if the committee already had the information. Secondly, my understanding of what the committee already knew at the time of my letter of January 18. This committee's failure to ask me for a confidential or detailed briefing reinforced the assumption I already had that others already had made available to the committee information about the problems at Calhoun. The reasons for this assumption require a review of events beginning with the end of November 1976. I think these events show that, contrary to the allegations which have appeared in the press, my actions during the period immediately preceding the confirmation hearing were intended to communicate Mr. Lance's record as a banker to those who were constitutionally responsible for his nomination and confirmation. From July 31, 1976 to July 12, 1977, the position of controller of the currency was vacant, and by statute, the first deputy controller exercised those functions during the vacancy. For this period, therefore, I headed the federal agency primarily responsible for the examination and supervision of this country's approximately 4,700 federally chartered national banks. About November 30, 1976, or December 1, the controller's office received inquiries from the press concerning the existence of possible enforcement agreements pursuant to the Financial Institution Supervisory Act between the controller's office and the National Bank of Georgia or the Calhoun First National Bank at Calhoun, Georgia. The facts were that there was an enforcement agreement in force with the Calhoun Bank from December 2nd, 1975 to November 22nd, 1976. Our normal response to press inquiries concerning enforcement agreements is not to comment. This is in accordance with the legislative intent of that act, which I happened to participate in drafting when I was chief counsel of the controller's office in 1976, along with the general counsels of the FDIC, the Home Loan Bank Board, and the Federal Reserve. That intent, as we drafted it and as the committee and Congress later approved it, were that proceedings pursuant to that act would be accorded privacy unless the agency, after seeking the views of the bank, found that public proceedings were necessary to protect the public interest. On December 1, 1976, the impending nomination by President-elect Carter of Mr. Lance to a high-level position was widely reported but not yet officially confirmed. I concluded, therefore, that this was a situation where there could well be an overriding public interest in disclosure of the existence of the Calhoun Agreement. Before replying to the press inquiries, however, the law required me to call the principal offices of the bank involved to obtain their views about publication of the existence of the agreement. I also believe that calling Mr. Lance was the quickest and surest way of communicating to others high up in the incoming administration the facts I knew concerning the banks managed by Mr. Lance. I felt sure, from what I had read of the relationship of Mr. Lance and the president-elect, that Mr. Lance would keep nothing of importance from Mr. Carter. I therefore, on December the 1st, 1976, placed calls to Mr. Y.A. Henderson, the president of the Calhoun Bank, and Mr. Lance, who was chairman of the board of directors of Calhoun at that time. When I told Mr. Lance about the press inquiries concerning the possible existence of an enforcement agreement at either National Bank of Georgia or Calhoun, Mr. Lance asked for my advice as to what he should do. I suggested that he do two things right away. One, that he fully brief President-elect Carter or Mr. Jody Powell as to all the facts concerning the enforcement agreement, so that they would not be caught unaware by any reporters' questions. And secondly, I suggested that we draft a release describing the circumstances surrounding the entry of the agreement and its later satisfactory compliance by the bank and termination. Subsequent events confirmed that Mr. Lance followed my advice on both of these counts. Mr. Henderson's reply indicated some concern about the adverse publicity affecting his bank, but he deferred to Mr. Lance as to any determination on that matter. Mr. Lance said that he was perfectly willing to disclose any matters about his own affairs or his immediate family, but did not wish the office to say anything to the press that might have the effect of hurting the bank or third parties. Mr. Lance said that he wished me to discuss the matter with Judge Sidney Smith, an attorney with the law firm of Alston, Miller, and Gaines in Atlanta. Another partner in this law firm was Mr. John L. Moore, Jr., who I understand was the person in charge of the conflict of interest standards who would be applied to all appointees in the Carter administration. The senior partner in that firm was Mr. Philip H. Alston, now the United States Ambassador to Australia. On December 1, 1976, I had a telephone conversation with Mr. Smith and Mr. Moore, in which we discussed a proposed press release summarizing the supervisory problems of the Comptroller's Office with the Calhoun Bank and the resolution of those problems. The IRS report, which I understand is available to this committee, contains summaries of the statements of Mr. Smith and Mr. Moore. Their statements show that as a result of the December 1 telephone conversation, they were aware of the problems at the Calhoun Bank, including the enforcement agreement. Mr. Moore's statement, as reported by the IRS in part, is as follows, quote, until this meeting, he called it a meeting, it was a phone call. Until this meeting, he had not been aware of the agreement or the referral of information to the Department of Justice. They prepared a press release for Mr. Lance's use, and Mr. Lance called the president-elect, Mr. Carter, and briefed him on the contents of the press release. They all spoke with Mr. Carter on the conference speakerphone, and he, Moore, inferred that Mr. Carter was knowledgeable of the matters discussed. He does not recall whether Mr. Carter was made aware of the referral to the Justice Department, but it is possible. Similarly, Mr. Lance says in his affidavit to the IRS that, quote, I met with President-elect Carter that afternoon, December 1, 1975, at approximately 2 p.m. I discussed the press release matter with Mr. Carter, but I do not recall if I had a copy of the press release, close quote. Testimony from Messrs. Smith and Moore and all copies of the draft press release found by the IRS confirm my recollection that the draft press release specifically mentioned the Calhoun Agreement. As a result of my telephone conversations with Judge Smith and Mr. Lance, participated in by Mr. Moore, I believed at all times thereafter that the president-elect and members of the transition team responsible for appointments were aware or should have been aware of the most serious problems known to me at that time in connection with Mr. Lance's personal transactions. Later in the months of December 1976 and early January 1977, I made additional information concerning these problems available to the FBI in the course of the routine background check on Mr. Lance. The FBI, in the course of making that check on Mr. Lance, interviewed employees of our Atlanta and Washington offices, including myself. Regional Administrator Tarleton has told the IRS in his affidavit that his best recollection is that I instructed him, Tarleton, to disclose to the FBI whatever information was sought. Mr. Tarleton further told the IRS that he offered the FBI agent an opportunity to review any documents in the Atlanta office. The FBI was informed about our referral to the Department of Justice of the campaign overdrafts and the information in our examination report showing overdrafts by Mr. and Mrs. Lance. The FBI was also aware of the Campbell case, which was a major defalcation in Calhoun, which the FBI had investigated in 1975. The FBI report confirms that the investigating agents also were aware of the written agreement at Calhoun. Moreover, newspaper stories had appeared about our regulatory problems at the Calhoun Bank. Our supervisory problems at Calhoun appeared from the information then available to me to involve poor banking practice but not dishonesty. I did not think that these problems disqualified Mr. Lance from public office. I therefore commented in my letter on the problems found at the Calhoun Bank, but I tried to balance those negative comments with references to Mr. Lance's considerable positive accomplishments as a banker. And I concluded with my personal opinion that Mr. Lance was well qualified. In what I considered the unlikely event that the committee was unaware of the problems at the Calhoun Bank, the letter contains significant red flags on the subject. I was always available to supply any further information the committee desired. To the best of my knowledge, the committee did not call for any further information from the controller's office until late July of this year. Thirdly, in January 1977, I was not aware of many new transactions and of many details of transactions that I did know about as contained in this recent August 18th report of our office. As you know, at the beginning of July, Controller Hyman, with the full support of the President and the Secretary of the Treasury, started an extensive inquiry into the banking affairs of Mr. Lance, covering his entire service as president of the National Bank of Georgia and going back to the early 1970s at Calhoun First National. The report of this inquiry is an extensive document with hundreds of pages of exhibits. This report contains the details of a number of personal loans made by Mr. Lance at banks with which the National Bank of Georgia did business. The existence of these transactions was not known to me in January. Even more importantly, the August report contained a full record of the campaign committee accounts and the Lance family and the David family accounts at the Calhoun First National. At the time of writing my letter, I only had the figures on those accounts as they appeared on the two examinations which were conducted on April the 28th, 1975, and October the 20th, 1975. The April 28th, 1975 report of examination by our bank examiner showed Mrs. Lance overdrawn by $11,039. In contrast, Mrs. Lance's relatives were overdrawn for a total of $266,000 as of that April 28th. That's why my letter to the committee mentioned the overdrafts of Mrs. Lance's relatives rather than those of Mr. and Mrs. Lance themselves. I believe Senator Danforth may have raised that question during the hearings last week. And that is the answer to that question. Because when at the time I wrote the letter, the The Mr. and Mrs. Lance overdrafts were comparatively insignificant. The family overdrafts were significant. The August 18, 1977 OCC report contained information as to the peak amounts of overdrafts by Mrs. Lance, for example, which was not available to me in January. If I had known in January all of the facts contained in the August 1877 report, I would have expressed myself differently in my January 18 letter to this committee. I'm ready to respond to questions, Mr. Chairman, but I would like to request that at this time the two affidavits which I gave to the IRS be placed in the record to appear with my oral testimony this morning at this point in the record.
Without objection, so ordered. Mr. Bloom, did you write a letter to Secretary Blumenthal asking to be considered for the position of the Comptroller of the Currency?
Yes, I did.
Did you have lunch with Mr. Lance on January 10th, 1977, and during the course of that meeting, ask Mr. Lance about the procedure for the selection of the next Comptroller of the Currency?
I did have one luncheon with Mr. Lance. The date I will accept. It sounds about right. It's in the record, I'm sure. The only reference to the controllership was my statement to Mr. Lance that I had written the letter and that I wished to be considered. I don't recall asking about procedure because, after all, this is not a matter which is subject to procedure. The president makes such appointments as he deems necessary.
This is Lance. Now, I have Mr. Lance's affidavit. I had lunch with Bloom at the Sheraton Carlton Hotel. However, I do not recall a specific date. I do not recall Bloom saying he sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Designate Blumenthal requesting that he, Bloom, be considered as a candidate for comptroller. I do not recall Bloom ever telling me that he, Bloom, wished to be named comptroller, but I generally understood this to be the case. As I recall, in response to a question from Bloom regarding the procedure for selecting the comptroller, I suggested to Bloom that he talk to Blumenthal. Would that reflect generally the accuracy of the conversation between you and Mr. Lance?
Well, I think it would, Mr. Chairman. It's my recollection that I mentioned that I had written the letter, but in terms of him saying that any contact, anything further, should be with Mr. Blumenthal, that is correct, yes, sir.
That is correct. Now, did you, as Judge Sidney Smith, Jr., one of Mr. Lance's attorneys, stated to the IRS, during December conversation, tell Judge Smith that you were at a dead end unless you got the comptroller's job?
I may have mentioned that. After we got through talking about the release, I chatted a little bit with Sidney Smith.
You may have mentioned it. Did you or did you not mention it to Mr. Smith?
I think I did say that.
You did say that?
Yes, sir.
Did you say?
Yes, sir.
Now, did you state to Judge Smith, as he told the IRS, that you were reluctant to disclose information about Mr. Lance because you wanted to be kind to Mr. Lance?
I did not say that. I didn't use those words. No, sir. I suppose he may have gotten that impression, but I didn't say I wanted to be kind to Mr. Lance.
I will read you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Bloom was very circumspect because of the disclosure statute and the confidential nature of the information. There was a lot of discussion regarding the release of the statement because of the statute on disclosure. The reason Mr. Bloom was so guarded in this respect, because he did not want to be accused by the bank or Mr. Lance for breach of confidentiality. Mr. Bloom also wanted to be kind to Mr. Lance. Would you say Mr. Smith was right or wrong when he made that statement about your conversation?
I don't think that in that paraphrase of the interview that the sentence Mr. Bloom wanted to be kind to Mr. Lance was reflecting a words that I uttered. I think it reflects Mr. Smith's impression that he got of a conversation.
And that's what you want us to believe is what took
place. Well, I think I understand the IRS report to say that Mr. Smith told the IRS interviewer that Mr. Bloom wanted to be kind to Mr. Lance. Not that Mr. Bloom said he wanted to be kind to Mr.
Lance. Well, how do you think that Mr. Judge Smith, who's an experienced lawyer and former judge, got that impression from his conversation with you that you wanted to be kind to him?
I don't know how Judge Smith got
that. You don't know how he got that. Did you contact Mr. Beatty, a partner in the law firm representing Mr. Lance, and tell him that you wanted to be appointed comptroller of the currency?
I spoke to Dick Beatty, who used to work for me and is an old friend. I don't know whether I called him or whether it was in the course of some other encounter that I was interested in the controller's job. Yes, sir.
You did indicate to him that you're interested in the controller's
job. Oh, yes, sir.
Mr. Bloom, would it be fair to conclude that concerns about your future job possibilities clouded your judgment as what information should be provided to this committee and the FBI concerning Mr. Lance?
No, I wouldn't put it that way, Mr. Chairman, but I would say this, that as a career employee, it was only human on my part to worry a little bit about the effects on my future, not as far as the controllership was concerned, Mr. Chairman, but as far as the deputy controllership or any job in this government, if I engaged in an operation which ended up with Mr. Lance's nomination being blocked. I did consider that. I happen to be a man who depends on his government job for a living. It's a little easier for people who have independent means to be heroes in this regard, Mr. Chairman.
But in other words, the factor of your future employment and your future advancement did have an impact on your procedures in the whole Lance activity.
I thought of my own future in when I took important actions, Mr. Chairman. Yes, sir.
All right. Now, Mr. Bloom, in a 1975 report of the Comptroller's Office, the overall management rating of the Calhoun Bank was, quote, was fair. This represents, does it not, the third lowest rating category out of four possible ratings? Fair?
I don't know. We've changed around on those ratings so much. I believe so, Mr. Chairman. But if you're going to refer to ratings of the Calhoun Bank, I could also refer to other examination reports, and I've got them right here, and I'll like to put one of them in the record, that rated the Calhoun Bank quite good and, in fact, gave Mr. Lance credit for that good rating at that time.
All right. Let's go on to the 1975 report. The comptroller's report notes at the outset, quote, the primary reason the overall management rating of the bank was not considered poor is that both active management and the board are considered completely honest, but who over the years have replaced sound banking policies and procedures with an unhealthy degree of nepotism. The examination report goes on to state that there is no doubt that the Chairman Lance serves as the single most dominant force in the bank. The board is a lackluster group of individuals who have virtually turned over to Mr. Lance complete authority for running the bank. It is a firm opinion of the writer that the two officers at the top, including Lance, are very weak administrators and executive officers. Both men, in their own way, succumb to outside pressures regarding the abandonment of sound banking practices and procedures. Mr. Bloom, in light of this 1975 report by the Comptroller's Office on Mr. Lance and his bank, How do you justify including in your January 18th, 1977 letter to our committee, quote, Mr. Lance enjoys a very good reputation in the banking community, and it is my opinion, based on all the facts available to me, that Mr. Lance is well qualified to serve as the director of the Office of Management and Budget?
Well, first of all, Mr. Chairman, I want to take this question, which is the proper one to make the statement, that there is one thing in that letter which I do regret very much having written, and that is that last paragraph which you read. And the reason I regret having written it is not because I thought I was writing something at that time that was not true or was inaccurate. I regret having written it because it was an improper question, in my opinion, or an inappropriate question, for a Senate committee to be putting to a career official in my position. I should not have rendered any opinion for the public record of a proposed high-level cabinet appointee's qualifications at all. I should have stuck strictly to facts in that letter. That I am more than willing to admit. As a matter of fact, I'm glad to have the opportunity to admit it. But in terms of quarreling with my conclusion, I think I could support that. Because
no.
Mr. Lance did have a good reputation in the banking community at that time. I had been working with bank examiners for a long time. I knew that they were given to the overuse of adjectives at times. And I read bank examination reports not in relation to the adjectives. As a matter of fact, I very often go through it and mark out the adjectives. I'm interested in facts and facts only. And the facts are that Mr. Lance was a very successful banker. He happened to be the type of banker that bank examiners do not like. He was an aggressive banker. He did not pay attention to details.